Section 2, Crossing the Territory. As you read, look for the various routes travelers took westward, including those through Indian Territory. Methods of transportation used by travelers. Vocabulary terms: station, caravan, transcontinental railroad, and contract. Whenever possible, the early traders and travelers used the rivers to get from place to place. It was easier to travel by boat, mainly in the eastern part of the territory, where the rivers were deeper and rainfall was more abundant. The usually abundant rainfall of spring and early summer made those the best times to use the rivers, although too much rain and floods created their own problems. Many boats sank in the sometimes turbulent, log-jammed waters. Early commercial craft included canoes and keelboats. Keelboats could transport large amounts of supplies, Indians and troops. Steamboats soon began to navigate the Arkansas and Red Rivers. The Scioto and the Velocipede were two of the first steamboats to travel to Fort Gibson in 1827. In 1831, the steamboat Enterprise, commanded by Captain Hawley, successfully traveled the Red River to the mouth of the Kiamichi. Trailblazing. Many of the first trails used by white people actually followed buffalo or other animal paths, or trails Indians had used for hundreds of years to go between camps or to find food and water. Early Spanish priests, traders, and trappers followed an old Spanish trail from Natchitoches, Louisiana, up the Red River to present-day Tillman County, then northwest to Santa Fe. This was an ancient trail deeply cut and rutted by heavy Mexican cartwheels, Simon Cockrell later testified at a hearing concerning the Oklahoma-Texas boundary. The Santa Fe Trail. In 1848, discovery of gold at Sutter's Mill in California caused a flood of people to make the journey to the West Coast. A few traveled by ship around the tip of South Africa, which took about a year, but most made the 4 to 6 month journey on horseback or wagon along dangerous, rutted trails across the continent. Many overland travelers headed for California followed southern trails, such as the Santa Fe Trail, which began in Independence, Missouri. In spite of the lack of reliable water, most travelers chose the Cimarron route of the Santa Fe Trail, which cut through the Oklahoma Panhandle. The Cimarron route was about 60 miles or 10 days shorter than the route through the Rocky Mountains. William Becknell, a Missouri trader, led the first wagon train pulled by mules on the Santa Fe Trail in 1821. The route became so important for traders and those hauling freight that Congress authorized George Sibley to survey and mark it in 1825. Military supplies were often transported on the Santa Fe Trail, and dragoons patrolled it for raiders. Thousands of people, horses, mules, oxen, and wagons traveled on the Santa Fe Trail until the coming of the railroads led to its demise, end, in the 1870s. The deeply cut tracks made by the wagon wheels can still be seen in the Oklahoma Panhandle. Many worn-out travelers carved their names on sandstone rock while they rested and drank the refreshing water at cold springs. The Texas Road. People leaving St. Louis and heading to the Indian Territory, Texas, or Santa Fe often followed the Osage Trace. The Osage Trace passed by what is now Veneta, then followed the Grand River by Salina and Fort Gibson, on to Perryville, near McAllister, and Boggy Depot, and into Texas. Highway 69 roughly follows this route today. As white traders and settlers headed west and south, the Osage Trace came to be called the Texas Road. In 1846, Lieutenant James Abert reported, quote, "The way from Fort Gibson was literally lined with wagons of immigrants to Texas, and from this time until we arrived at St. Louis, we continued daily to see hundreds of them." End quote. Stagecoach drivers could trade for fresh horses, and passengers could find refreshments and lodging at several stations, regular stopping places, located on the Texas Road. There were 6 stations on the Texas Road between Fort Gibson and Baxter Springs, Kansas, and others were located between Fort Gibson and the Red River. The California Road. In 1849, Captain Randolph B. Marcy and troops escorted 500 gold seekers from Fort Smith to Santa Fe. People gathered at Fort Smith from as far away as New York with their wagons, oxen, and mules. At Fort Smith, they restocked supplies, made repairs, and waited for the caravan, a procession of wagons traveling in single file, to head west. Marcy and his caravan set out on the 819-mile journey to Santa Fe on April 4th. On good days, the caravan traveled up to 15 miles a day, but on mountainous or rough terrain, they made as little as 4 miles. The caravan also had to stop and camp while waiting out heavy rains and storms. The expedition reached Santa Fe on June 28th. Marcy left the caravan at Santa Fe and returned to Fort Smith. With no wagon road west of Santa Fe, the caravan traveled south 300 miles near El Paso before again heading west on the Gila River Trail. Marcy's trail from Fort Smith to Santa Fe later became known as the California Road. Landmarks and distinguishable physical features helped guide the travelers. A sandstone butte about 5 miles south of present-day Hydro was one such landmark. One of the travelers with the Marcy group was 17-year-old Mary Conway, granddaughter of Arkansas Governor Conway and cousin of President James Madison. Upon spotting the landmark, several young officers, eager to impress Mary, raced to the hill, raised an American flag, and proclaimed the hill Rock Mary. In her honor, Major Enoch Steen, surveying the road in 1858, named the sandstone hills near Rock Mary Steen's Buttes. Other California trails. Captain L. Evans led another expedition of 130 people and 40 wagons that departed from Fayetteville, Arkansas on April 20, 1849. On a new Cherokee trail, they traveled through the Cherokee Nation, crossed the Grand River at Salina and the Verdigris near present-day Claremore, and headed northwest until they got on the Santa Fe Trail. At the fork of the new Cherokee Trail and the Santa Fe, they engraved a rock, quote, "To Fayetteville, Arkansas, 300 miles, Captain Evans Company, May 12, 1849, end quote. They also left an oilcloth envelope containing their journal of the trip, and asked whoever found it to forward it to a St. Louis newspaper. Amazingly, someone did deliver the envelope, and the article was published in the St. Louis Republican on July 2nd and in the Arkansas Gazette on July 26, 1849. Another California route through Indian Territory went from Fort Smith along the California Trail until it came to Coal Creek. From there, it turned southwest to El Paso, Texas, then west again. Traveling the trails. Caravan after caravan of wagons headed west on both the southern routes through Indian Territory and the more northern Oregon Trail. Parties heading east in June 1850 estimated there were 75,000 westbound immigrants on the upper trails and another 25,000 on the southern routes. Regardless of the route, all the immigrants faced great hardships, and many died and were buried along the trails. Captain Marcy wrote a handbook, The Prairie Traveler, for people traveling to California. He recommended routes and items that should be taken. He wrote that wagons needed to be simple, but the top had to be strong enough to withstand the sun and weather. His experience proved that oxen were better suited to withstand the drastic weather variations and the length of the journey than were mules or horses. he recommended the following supplies for each person: 150 pounds of flour, 25 pounds of pork, 15 pounds of coffee, 25 pounds of sugar, yeast for making bread, salt, pepper, butter in tins, dried vegetables, citric acid to prevent scurvy, and other medicines such as quinine, opium, and a laxative. Only the most essential pots, pans, bedding, and tools were suggested, plus a few spare parts for the inevitable wagon breakdowns. Weapons were also essential for protection and for killing game to eat. The immigrants weren't the only ones affected by the westward travels. Fort Smith and other points of departure faced supply shortages. Arkansas and other states grew concerned that the large number of people leaving threatened to drain them of people and money. The slavery issue became part of the discussion over whether the northern or southern routes were better. The northern routes usually received more publicity, even though the milder weather on the southern routes allowed for a longer traveling window. In 1851, Marcy was told to establish a military post further west to protect the white immigrants and traders and to maintain peace among the Indians. He selected a site south of the Canadian River near present-day Byers-McLean County for Camp Arbuckle. Later that year, at Marcy's suggestion, the camp was moved 30 miles southwest to the Washita River and renamed Fort Arbuckle, located west of Davis. Railroad Survey. Beginning in the 1840s, there was a great deal of interest and talk of a transcontinental railroad, a railroad that spans the continent from ocean to ocean. As the United States increased its territory, the discussions grew even more intense. People from northern states wanted the railroad in the northern part of the country, while southerners favored a southern route. The vast Indian Territory, which included the area north of Texas all the way to Canada, was now in the center of the country rather than on its western border. Before 1854, the unorganized territory in the United States included almost 500,000 square miles north of what became Oklahoma and over 50,000 square miles in what became our state. Any transcontinental route other than an extreme southern one would have to cross this immense territory. One proposal called for relocating the five tribes and other Indians to the area of the Dakotas. Two other suggestions included securing a passageway through the territory and forming an Indian state. The end result of the discussions was the Kansas-Nebraska Act of 1854. That act divided the territory north of Oklahoma into two separate organized territories, Kansas and Nebraska. As organized territories, Kansas and Nebraska were opened to white settlers and the door was opened for a railroad. Unhappy with an unorganized area on the west, which guaranteed tribes freedom from state or territorial control, Senator Robert Johnson of Arkansas introduced a bill in 1854 that would have organized what is now Oklahoma. No action was taken on Johnson's bill, although efforts continued to open the territory of the five tribes until the Civil War broke out. With the new expansion of land and the massive migrations west, Congress authorized the War Department to conduct surveys in 1853 to find the most practical and economical route for a railroad from the Mississippi River to the Pacific Ocean. Secretary of War Jefferson Davis, future president of the Confederacy, oversaw the surveys. One proposed route from Memphis to the Pacific Ocean ran along the 35th parallel, somewhat south of the Canadian River. Lieutenant Amiel W. Whipple, a topographical engineer, directed that survey, which began July 14, 1853, at Fort Smith. His party included engineers, geologists, astronomers, and surveyors. Naturalist J. M. Bigelow, J. Markow, and Caleb Kennerly, and German topographer and artist H. B. Baldwin Mahlhausen. the party followed the Canadian River through the panhandle of Texas, then on to Albuquerque, New Mexico. They reached the Pueblo de Los Angeles, on March 20, 1854. Whipple made a number of interesting observations in the Indian Territory. The party found a large settlement of Shawnee Indians with well-cultivated fields. Whipple bought several head of cattle from Jesse Chisholm, the famous half-Cherokee guide and scout, and noted the 7 Mexican slaves Chisholm had bought from the Comanche. The survey party passed by a settlement of several hundred Delaware Indians and their chief, Black Beaver. Neither Chisholm nor Black Beaver would sign on as guide for the Whipple group. Near Mustang Creek, the survey party found a trail used by Indians going to Chouteau's trading post, a route that they reported would make an easy railroad grade. In fact, Whipple concluded that the entire route from Fort Smith to California would be excellent for a railroad. Whipple estimated it would cost over $169 million to build the railroad on the 35th parallel, compared to $69 million for the least expensive estimate. Only later was it discovered that a simple mathematical error had almost doubled Whipple's actual figure. North and South rivalries played a large part in delaying the building of the railroad. After the Civil War began and the Southern states seceded, the Union passed the first of several railroad acts that favored a northern route. While the route through the Indian Territory wasn't selected for the Transcontinental Railroad, the survey parties gathered an enormous amount of information. The 5 railroad surveys provided an excellent picture of the western United States in the 1850s. Butterfield Overland Mail. The invention of the telegraph in the 1840s had greatly improved communications, but those telegraph lines didn't cover the newly expanded United States. To fill in the large gaps between lines, messages were sent by mail, which was carried by stagecoach. The stagecoach also carried several passengers, and between 1850 and 1870 was the primary form of public transportation. John Butterfield of Missouri was president of the Overland Mail Company. In 1858, Butterfield won the contract to carry mail between the Mississippi Valley and California. A contract is a formal, legally binding agreement between two or more parties. Butterfield's company owned more than 100 Concord coaches, each of which could carry 6 passengers, 1,000 horses, and 500 mules. It employed almost 800 men. The Butterfield stage route entered Oklahoma near Fort Smith and continued southwest to Boggy Depot, where it crossed the Texas Road. From Boggy Depot, the stage route went south to Colbert's Ferry and across the Red River. Stations were located at regular intervals along the route, so that tired horses and mules could be quickly exchanged for fresh ones. In Indian Territory, the company made arrangements with the Choctaw and Chickasaw nations to maintain the stations. The two nations had passed laws that required citizens to work a certain number of days on public highways. There was not enough money or people to maintain the many trails, so a toll system was used, as was customary in other parts of the country. The Choctaw toll rates were, quote, for each 4-wheeled wagon or other vehicle drawn by 4 or more horses, mules, or oxen with driver, the sum of 50 cents. For each 4-wheeled wagon drawn by 1 or 2 horses, 25 cents. For each man and horse, the sum of 10 cents. And for each animal in every drove of cattle, horses, mules, hogs, or sheep, 1 cent. End quote. A New York newspaper reporter, Waterman Ormsby, rode the stage on its first run. Ormsby reported, quote, we forded the Poteau at Fort Smith, and for the first time since our departure from St. Louis, I had an opportunity to sleep in the wagon. It took some time to get accustomed to the jolting over the rough road, the rocks and log bridges, but 3 days' steady riding without sleep helped me get used to it. End quote. The first stop in the Indian Territory was in the Choctaw Nation, about 16 miles from the river. Ormsby noted the Choctaw owned large herds of cattle but did little farming. The stations, sometimes 16 miles apart, could be reached in 2.5 hours. The reporter noticed many tall posts for stickball in the plains areas, which were becoming more frequent. The stagecoach, traveling continuously, made very good time. Near Blackburn's station, about 60 miles from the Red River, the stage entered a patch of woods through which the road was tortuous and stony, Ormsby wrote. He continued, quote, "But our driver's ambition to make good time overcame his caution, and away he went, bounding over the stones at a fearful rate. The moon shone brightly, but its light was obstructed by the trees, and the driver had to rely much on his knowledge of the road for a guide. To see the heavy mail wagon whizzing and whirling over the jagged rocks through such a labyrinth in comparative darkness, and to feel oneself bouncing now on the hard seat, now against the roof, and now against the side of the wagon, was no joke, I assure you, though I can truthfully say that I rather liked the excitement of the thing. But it was too dangerous to be continued without an accident, and soon two heavy thumps and a bound of the wagon that unseated us all, and a crashing sound denoted that something had broken." End quote. Thinking it was only a broken seat, they continued to the station, where they realized the wagon tongue was split. Repairs were soon made, and they were on the way again, arriving shortly at Colbert's Ferry. The trip from St. Louis by train, 160 miles, to Tipton, Missouri, then by stagecoach to Sherman, Texas, just across the Red River from Colby's Ferry, a total of 673 miles, had taken 4 days and 6 hours. The total trip from St. Louis to San Francisco, 2,795 miles, took almost 25 days. In 1860, the Pony Express proved to be an even faster way to deliver mail, but the Civil War interrupted plans for a Butterfield Pony Express service. After the war, stagecoaches once again traveled the Butterfield stage route for a few years until railroad travel took over. Not yet even 100 years old, the young nation would soon be involved in a horrific war that expanded across the lands as fast as the settlers had, and with equally destructive consequences. It's your turn. Number one, why do you suppose Lieutenant Whipple's party included naturalists? Number two, why did the railroad surveys begin at the Mississippi River? The following is a summary of Chapter 7. White settlers from the north, east, and south continued to head west in search of new lives and new lands. John L. O'Sullivan coined the term manifest destiny to explain the western movement of settlers. Whenever possible, early traders and settlers used rivers to travel west. The discovery of gold in California escalated the number of immigrants heading west. Several trails the travelers used led through Indian Territory. Those people traveling west relied on landmarks and physical features as guides, as well as the handbook, The Prairie Traveler. Surveys were conducted to determine the feasibility of building a transcontinental railroad. One of the proposed routes went through Indian Territory. Lieutenant Emil Whipple led that survey. Both the Butterfield Overland Stage and the Pony Express were used during this period to transport mail.